Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. True Wealth is a weekly program sponsored by Coins Plus. Coins Plus is a full-service precious metals broker-dealer located in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is committed to honesty and integrity in every transaction. Now here's the host of True Wealth, Kevin Wolter.
Hello again and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin Wolter, the host of True Wealth. True Wealth is a weekly radio program sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is located inside the Division Hill Clock Tower Plaza at 3201 North Division Street. Coins Plus is a full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer and depository service, constantly, continuously buying and selling all forms of precious metals, rare coins, collections, scrap gold, jewelry, diamond, collectible watches. I mentioned on the previous show, I'm a personal firearms collector, tactical style. That's through my private holdings. I am not a firearms dealer, and I don't sell them, but I will buy them as a collector, and I will trade for precious metals if you prefer. But again, I'm really interested in tactical weaponry, which pretty much means self-defense or, you know, that sort of thing. The things that they have erroneously labeled assault rifles, which is essentially intentionally designed to deceive, to make you think, oh no, it's an assault rifle, we're going to war, he's going to kill me. And somehow a gun that can shoot multiple bullets, you know, we're not allowed to own fully automatic weapons without federal papers, etc. Not constitutional in my opinion, doesn't mean I break the law, but I will tell you, the whole point of the right to keep and bear arms is to protect ourselves against a runaway tyrannical government. And quite frankly, with even an elementary understanding of history, you would realize that every government that becomes tyrannical and takes over their people starts by disarming them, in some cases violently. And it's really interesting that this wonderful utopian concept of socialism that was invented by Mr. Karl Marx, as I covered a few weeks back, as the anti-Christian religion, has been the catalyst for the absolute genocide of the greatest number of people in history. I mean, there's been horrible leaders, Alexander the Great and things like that, that have slaughtered Jews and, you know, various people they don't like. But no leader, no war, and no philosophy have even come remotely close to the devastation and destruction caused by the philosophy of socialism. Now we've created a generation of terribly entitled youth. We sit on TV and in school and we tell them the economy's bad, you can't get a job, it's too hard out there. And we tell them, you know, what is a job to a kid, okay? Kids believe that a job is something that you show up for every day and they pay you to be there. A job is a place that you work and you earn your money. And I guess when I was a kid, nothing special, but I used to just, I'd have lawn jobs and then I'd run ads in the nickel papers and I'd basically say, you know, labor ready, I'm ready to go, I'm willing, I will work for food, I actually work for cash. And I would say, you know, I would just put out there that I was available. I got all kinds of calls, I got to do all kinds of crazy stuff. Growing up in Montana, I got to buck hay bales and haul loads of this and build fence. And, you know, I got to do all kinds of crazy stuff. I worked for a few nutcases for short periods of time. I worked for some great guys. I worked for guys when I was 14 years old that would, we'd go deliver a truck full of grain and they'd try to take me into the bar and I'd get kicked out of the bar because I was 14 and I shouldn't have been there. But they were adults and told me to come in with them. But I always was available to do work. And over time, I learned how to landscape. I always was the weed puller. I remember I'd get jobs as a lawn boy. I'd just go talk to the neighbors and set a fee to mow their lawn, which was always way too cheap because I didn't know any better. I wasn't a good business negotiator. And then I was a fool. I would tell people that I pulled weeds, which is about the single crappiest job known to man. So I'd spend hours leaning over, pulling weeds, doing a nice job, etc., learning a heck of a lot about work ethic. And then through college, I always had physical labor, you know, and you learn, man. When you work that hard blue-collar labor, oh boy, do you learn to value that white-collar job. When you're sitting in a chair, you know, for a fair chunk of the day and you're getting paid to use your brain and your mouth instead of your muscles and your back and your hamstrings, wow, that feels good. And I'll never forget, I had a job one summer working on a sod farm, the old style, that had the sod cutters that the handles were just about at my knees. And you'd be out in the 105 degree August sun starting at 6 in the morning, cutting sod and then rolling it by hand down on your hands and knees, picking up the rolls and filling a truck up, and literally coming home sometimes at 11 at night. But in Montana, because it's farm labor, they didn't have to pay you overtime. And I don't know how many of you noticed a couple weeks back, Obama was pushing, and maybe he still does, to get overtime for management level employees. The way management level employees work is they get a salary and they're usually required to work at least 40 hours a week, more like 50 plus. I always did. My wife and I were talking the other day. From the day I left college, I've never worked a 40-hour work week. I've always worked much longer. In fact, even when I was in college, I was working full-time while I went to school. But management employees, you know, they'll have to write down on their time card that they worked 40 hours a week. And some people that are in management positions will find that offensive. They'll be like, I worked more than that. Well, the point isn't to get the hours that you work. The point is to get you the full 40 hours of federal state benefits and make sure that, you know, you're covered on Social Security and everything down the road. If you're working 55 hours a week, you don't really need to clarify that on the form. You just work that out with your employer. The only thing is, this 40-hour work week thing, folks, here's the way I've seen it. Now, some people may take offense at this, but the bottom line is, anyone who's successful, really, really successful, works over 40 hours a week. If you're self-employed successfully, you either work way over 40 hours a week now or you did for a very long time. There's really no way around it. There are people that are just strictly hourly employees. That's what they're going to do and that's what they're going to make. But if you want to be an entrepreneur or anything like that, you're going to work over 40 hours a week. A lot of people, this younger generation, has all these things in their head. The 40-hour work week seems to fit people that want to make an hourly wage the rest of their life and have no desire to really hit that next level. But, you know, the bottom line is, it's not about hours worked. It's about projects completed or total productivity. Really, what's important is what's being accomplished. So on these management level salaries that, you know, managers work over 40 hours a week. On management level salaries, Obama wants these companies to start paying these guys overtime. And why? Maybe because it opens the door for unions to come in because the pay gets higher. I don't know. I know that everything he does, he tries to act like he's helping out the working man, but in reality, he's just pushing socialism. And then, you know, they mock. People call him a socialist and he goes crazy and they mock the fact that people say he's a socialist. That man is as socialistic as physically possible, and to deny that is completely disingenuous. So the bottom line is, there are jobs to be done out there. If you have a kid that needs a job, have him run an ad that says he'll work for whatever an hour. Make it reasonable. I don't know how many of you remember during the Occupy Wall Street thing, these kids that were out of college with no work experience whatsoever were demanding these ridiculous wages to get a job. And Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity were trying to get these people jobs. And, You know, there was a few that took it up. A lot of them just had a super big chip on their shoulder. They just expressed terrible arrogance. They believe that they're owed something by society. And this is what we're being taught. You're owed. You deserve it. And folks, that is not the way it works. That's not biblical. That's not right. You can do all kinds of things to have a guaranteed income. This is the Cloward and Piven strategy, okay? They want a guaranteed income for everybody. So here's what they do. So they sit back and they wait and they think that someone's going to just hand them these sweetheart jobs that never did exist. Everybody's had to start at the bottom and get experience, and then the raw talent floats to the surface. Now, I've mentioned in the past, I'm not opposed to a higher minimum wage at all. But this whole thing about paying these managers overtime, companies can't afford it. They've got it set in there, and if they're paying someone a good wage, 50 grand a year, and the guy's working some overtime, so be it. From my perspective, it's like, you know, it's about the work. It's about getting out and doing things and making it happen and not just sitting around waiting for them to come to you. These kids are learning all the wrong things in schools. They're just absolutely expecting these free handouts, and that's not the way the world works. I listen to myself, I sound like a grumpy old man. You gotta work hard to make money. But this is why our jobs are going to the immigrants that are coming into this country. They're proud to have it, they're glad to have it, and all this stuff skews an economy. You know, I've mentioned in the past, there's certain things attributed in the Bible as true wealth, okay? Gold, silver, livestock, real estate, human life. Let's take a look at them and think about them. We've also mentioned precious stones and gemstones. Okay, gold and silver. You must mine that in order to benefit from the value, okay? There is work and labor that goes into that. Then what do? Okay, you get dirt. People think you pull gold out of the ground like these pretty nuggets. In small quantities maybe, but not in large quantities. They mine gold in massive quantities by tons of dirt, tons and tons and tons of dirt. And they sift it and filter it and sieve it and dredge it. And then they have to shake it down, and then they have to melt it or initially refine it. And then they make doré bars, and those doré bars need to be further refined. And then after they're further refined, somebody gets the gold and turns it into a coin and whatever. So there's gold and silver, same process. How about livestock and real estate? Okay, well, let's talk about that. Livestock, those are animals. You got to feed them. You got to grow. The reason real estate's important is because it's an asset. Yes, but it's also, it's workable. You have to take care of it to grow food to feed your livestock. That's all work energy. You know, the reason is you put in work energy. Animals eat and they, you know, grow, and then eventually they provide food. And so man's putting work energy into taking care of them. And the final one, well, other than diamonds and gemstones, which I definitely agree, diamonds and gemstones obviously require work in order to get it. And this is all true wealth, folks. Now, here's what's happened in our society. I think all of this is the byproduct of a runaway fiat currency system. If you think about it, the way it works is like this. You know, we had real money, gold and silver backed currency, and then over time we've transitioned off of it. So simultaneously, all at the same time, we're pumping fiat currency out like it's going out of style. We've got an entire generation that doesn't know how to work. They think they're unemployed. They think they can't work. They're convinced they've got a sense of entitlement. And what's happening? What they are told is money is technically an intangible. Okay, so you got to look at tangible versus financial assets. And realize that wealth comes in many forms, but there's really two basic categories. There's tangible and financial. Tangible wealth is made up of real physical things like buildings, farmland, oil wells, commodities, etc. These things can be seen and touched, and they don't have third-party risk, okay? That's no one else has to make a good on a promise for a tangible asset to have value. the other way to look at it is someone already did make a promise. It's God. And you're like, well, okay, well, let's say everybody right now, you know, likes gold. And what if they all don't like gold? All of a sudden, every man on earth, billions of people, all of a sudden, one minute, decide we don't like gold anymore. Well, a little unreasonable, because you do have all these natural biblical laws. The precious metals, without getting into it, have so many amazing properties. They're just absolutely in demand, no matter whether you like it or not. They're gorgeous, they're usable, they're malleable, they don't, like, gold doesn't tarnish, it's infinitely divisible. So going completely contrary to common sense, if everybody stopped liking gold, what would happen? Well, here's what would really happen. Let's say they said, ah, that's junk, throw it in the streets. Pretty soon a kid picks it up because this stuff's cool, I like it. Pretty soon his buddy goes, man, I want it, I'll trade you this and that for it. And pretty soon he's got it, and his dad goes, where did you get that, kid? I like that, that's gold. And the dad takes it, and pretty soon he's looking at his neighbor, and he's going, look what my kid found out in the street. And the neighbor goes, well, I'll buy that off you. I'll give you X amount of money for it. And he, well, okay, well, I'd rather have Y amount. Okay, fine. So pretty soon he's got the gold sitting around, and somebody else goes, look what we came across. And up the ladder it goes, and a new market is established. This is the way it works. It's impressed within us somehow. God impressed money into our hearts. God impressed finance and economics and precious metals and true assets. He created this drive to succeed. That's why socialism will never work. It's completely contrary to human nature. Human nature is to succeed and prosper and work their way up the ladder and to do better than the next guy, not necessarily out of a negative spirit or motive, but just because God made us that way. We're like him. So tangible assets are hard assets. We can extend this beyond what's biblical. You could be a collector of cars, collector of guns. I've met a lot of guys that have done great. I had a customer who collected old cartridges, bullets, and I mean, wow, did he make some bucks on those. And he had some of these huge old boards that were put out by these bullet manufacturers, you know, that were just unbelievable and huge money over time. They just got massive. So people can collect all kinds of tangible assets, and that ends up having value. There, you name it, somebody collects it out there, okay? Now, let's talk about, that's tangible, hard assets, financial assets, bank deposits, insurance policies, annuities, bonds, stocks. These have third-party risk. That means they depend on someone else's promises other than God. A bank, now that's the other thing to remember about hard assets, okay? Gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, which we didn't touch on, all these other things require effort to make or to mine. Human life is the effort. That's the ultimate asset of all. Now, these people, these young Staruskis that believe that the world owes them a favor, they are unwilling to use their number one God-given skill of work energy to go out and get a job and work and produce. So we're all given this wonderful skill, the ability to produce wealth from God, okay? And this is where the parable of talents comes in, because the talents is such a neat word, because it's money, but it's talent. You know what talent is. And we're all called to be good stewards with what God's given us. We're to be wise and thrifty. We will be held accountable for what we've done with what God has given us, not only in the life to come, but in this life here and now. And when I say wise and thrifty, folks, I do not mean a squeaky tightwad or a hoarder. I mean, I've dealt with those kind of people. I've had an employee who was such an obsessive hoarder. He was a borderline Asperger's. We think he had just super greedy and super critical of somebody else if they went out and enjoyed themselves and bought nice things, and he just could not stand it. And he was making a lot of money, and he lived as tight as you can fathom. He wouldn't buy anything new, and he had to steal because he just could not stand to buy anything, and he ended up just being a complete dishonest thief. And he'd been given the world, just an income that's tremendous beyond anything he'll ever make again, support system behind him, and all this kind of stuff. Greed, miserly greed, is the opposite of what it appears to be or what they want to think. Somebody who's kind of maybe a little bit loose with their money, maybe even mildly frivolous, but within reason, they're not the ones that are going to rip you off. They're loose with their money. They're relaxed about it. They're not worried about it. That guy that just can't stand, he has to squeak every penny. This same employee, I gave one time a $1,000 gift certificate to all the wives of the employees to buy jewelry out of our, you know, out of our jewelry case. And he had to go and try to buy, you know, even though it was free, he had to intentionally take stuff out of a certain part of the vault and tell me he found it in a different part of the vault, which changed the value of it. And, you know, these kinds of things that you just can't even imagine. It was all forms of theft. And I probably should have dealt with it earlier, and I'd have saved myself a lot of headache. So our hands with money, you've got three options. You've got tight closed fist, you've got a relaxed open hand, or a wide open hand that's stretched out so far things are going to drop right out of it. You can't hold much of anything with a hand like that. When you have your hand in the relaxed half open position, the way it sits naturally, you can hold the most. People can reach in, they can take out, and they can put back. That's the way God wants us to be as stewards with our parable of talents. And in the Bible, in the parable of talents, it says he compares the kingdom of God. He says it's just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves, referring to us and our talents. And it says he entrusted his possessions to them. Whose possessions? The master of the slaves gave the slaves temporary control over stuff. It's for rent or lease. That's us, folks. Nothing here's ours. Nothing's ours. And you got to think about wealth. You know, when the Bible says clearly, show no partiality. I don't care if it's your kids or your spouse or your neighbor or some really cute girl. God doesn't like partiality. He wants us to be even keeled in all of our judgments, to treat everybody the same. And here's what we do in our society. You think about the way we treat the rich, and the Bible's clear, don't treat the rich different. But here's the way I look at it. Line up a number of men on, you know, on a lineup. Put a pair of jeans and a t-shirt on them, okay? You got a bunch of men, and then you can ask them a whole bunch of questions about themselves, and you're going to judge who they are. Now, put a chunk of gold in one of the guy's pockets. Put two chunks of gold in another guy's pocket, and put 10 chunks of gold in another guy's pocket. Is the guy with 10 chunks of gold in his pocket any better than the guy with one chunk of gold? I think not. But the point of that is, why in the world do we treat somebody different because they have more chunks of gold in their pocket? That's all riches is. God sees a man's heart. God does not care about Steve Jobs' accomplishments on earth. Steve Jobs started Apple, made it big. On his deathbed, he had no one there with him but his sister. His sister said that all of a sudden he looked up in terror and said, "Oh wow, oh wow, oh wow," and then he was gone. And in the interview, when the CNN gal was asking her, "Well, did he seem to have a sense of peace about him?" And his sister said, "No, he didn't have any of that whatsoever." All Steve Jobs was one of those guys lined up on the stage with a bunch of gold chunks in his pocket. So parable of talents goes on. He gave 1 5, 1 1, and 1 2. And it says, to each according to his own ability. That's another interesting concept. God treats us all individually, and he holds us all accountable individually. The guy with one talent could have pleased God more than the guy with 10 talents. So the amount of talent we have is not relevant. We do not need to look at each other. And he basically says, compare to each other. And he talks about the guy with 5 went out and made 10, and the guy with 2 went out and made 2 more. And then the guy with 1 went and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. And after a long time, the master came back. And then it's interesting how it transitions from, like I said, casting out the worthless slave into outer darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth, to the Son of Man coming in His glory, sitting on His throne with all the angels with Him and all the nations before Him, separating the sheep from the goats, putting the sheep on His right, the goats on His left, thanking the sheep for providing food, drink, hospitality to strangers, clothing, visiting prisoners, providing medicine and support to those in sickness and illness. Then it states to those on His left that they did not provide for His needs and casted them into the fire which is prepared for the devil and his angels. The use of the phrase talents, like I said, is amazing. And literally, folks, this is what we've got responsibility for. We have an obligation to those around us. A lot of people are like, well, what do I need this for? I don't want to be materialistic. I don't want all this money. Proverbs 27:12 says, a prudent man foresees danger ahead and takes precautions. The naive goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, if anybody does not provide for his relatives and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. It's not about us, folks. We need to prepare. Somebody's got to be the steward of God's goodness. We need to prepare. We need to store up. This is why we need to prepare. And I'll tell you, folks, everything is so ready and ripe to go. We've got a couple major issues that's facing this nation right now, okay? We're turning our back on the Ten Commandments in a rapid way. We've got all kinds of biblical prophecy coming down that we can go, and I'm going to cover that in the next show. And then, you know, you look at the 12 planks of communism, they're in full force right now, folks. Our mentality is me, me, me. The reason that we store up precious metals-based assets is to have true wealth. Obviously, the parable of talent says, you know what? God gives you, you got responsibility. You're a steward. You know, if you have this attitude about, well, I'm going to kick back and wait for God to do everything, you know, the Bible's full of commands to act. That's what we need to do. We're accountable. Money matters to God. If you think it doesn't, you're deceived. If you've got someone teaching you this, you're deceived. Money's huge. It encompasses every single aspect of your life. When we handle it properly, we're blessed, and when we don't, we're cursed. If you've got bad credit, if you don't pay your bills, if you blame everything on everybody else and you're ducking creditors, you lack character and integrity, and you know that about yourself. You may have all the excuses in the world, but the bottom line is you owe, so off to work you go. Thanks for tuning in. Please tune in to the next half hour where we'll pick this up and maybe persuade you, as 1 Timothy 5:8 says, if anyone doesn't provide for his relatives and especially his immediate family, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Combined with the parable of talents, it says that if you're given something by God, you better be out cultivating and working it. So please tune into the next half hour where we'll dig a little deeper. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care. God bless. We'll be right back.